Graham is a law student at U of M.
Coach Smith, the Honorable Jill Glascombe Hal Brooks presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. On behalf of the panel, welcome to the Court of Appeals, this 7th day of February, 2019. This is kind of one of those mornings where you feel you should get an award for being on time anyway. So congratulations and thank you for being on time. It's not easy out there. Marshall, could you please call our first case for oral argument?
The first case today is A180937, State of Minnesota versus Derek Ronald Shaw.
Thank you. Counsel, as you know, you each have 15 minutes for your argument, your principal argument, and note your appearance when you approach the podium. And of course, you'll have up to 5 minutes for rebuttal, appellant, if you would like to use it. So, counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Sam Luwagi, and I'm a certified student attorney here today representing the appellant, Derek Ronald Shaw. This case is on appeal from the Steele County District Court. The district court denied Mr. Shaw's motion to suppress evidence from an unconstitutional search of a fish house in his backyard and convicted him of two counts of driving under the influence. Your Honors, the police search of the outbuildings in Mr. Shaw's backyard violated his Fourth Amendment rights, and we ask that you reverse the district court for the following two reasons. First, Mr. Shaw had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the fish house because it was within the curtilage of his home. And second, no warrant exception applies to the officer's search. So Mr. Shaw did have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that fish house because it was in his own backyard, which is the curtilage of his home. Now in State v. Garza, the Minnesota Supreme Court noted that a person would have a reasonable expectation of privacy inside of even a storage shed if it was within the curtilage of a home. So the curtilage analysis here should focus on not on the condition or state of the fish house, but on the backyard. And if the backyard is curtilage, then all of the outbuildings within the backyard would be curtilage, and Mr. Shaw would have a reasonable expectation of privacy inside them. So from United States versus Dunn, the United States Supreme Court, enumerated four factors that weigh on whether an area is curtilage. One, the proximity of the area to the home. Two, whether the area is included in an enclosure surrounding the home. Three, the nature of the uses to which the area is put. And four, steps taken to protect the area from view. Three of those four factors here weigh strongly in favor of the backyard being curtilage. There was no enclosure surrounding the home, so that factor is neutral because it was neither included or excluded from the home area. But the proximity of the area to the home, this was a single family home within the city limits. It was not a large piece of rural property or a ranch.
Third city lot sort of deal?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. It was not a large piece of rural property or a ranch, as was the case in Dunn, where this factor was given rise to. The backyard, so, you know, as is typical of a home, as you said, a standard lot, it was relatively small, directly adjacent to the home, close proximity to the home, you know, under that first factor.
Well, let me ask this. Do you agree that the mother had authority to grant consent to search?
Yes, I do.
Okay. The findings of the district court were that she did give consent.
Yeah, and so I'll move to consent now then, Your Honor. Consent doesn't justify the search here because the officers, Mr. Shaw's mother gave consent to search the garage. And the district court made the factual finding, as you said, that two out of the three officers who testified found that she gave consent to search the backyard properties. But the transcript from the omnibus hearings and the record doesn't support that finding. Because in fact, two of the three officers said the opposite, that they only had specific permission to search the garage. And the one officer who contradicted that was not actually involved in the discussion with Mr. Shaw's mother.
That was Mach, right?
Yes.
And Mach says he was standing outside the door.
That's right.
The other two were conferring with the mother inside the door.
That's right. So if it would be helpful, I'll go through what each of the three officers said in the record about this, and also what their involvement was with the discussion. So first, Deputy Helgett is the one who actually made contact and spoke with Mr. Shaw's mother. And he, on page 20, line 7-8 of the transcript, the question was, and did she allow you to search anywhere in the home? The answer was, she allowed us to search the garage. On page 27, line 14 of the transcript, the question was, but you never asked her about the two fish houses, the trailer, or the storage shed, correct? And the answer was, I did not. Now Sergeant Forrestek, who testified that he was briefly inside of the entryway, on page 12, line 19 of the transcript, the question was, from what you were aware, it was pretty much two specific places, the garage and then her bedroom that she allowed. The answer was correct. And the bedroom there refers to, there was some, again, conflicting testimony about whether Mr. Shaw's mother went back to check a bedroom herself or whether she let two officers come with her. But either way,
doesn't matter, they didn't find anything.
Right. So Sergeant Forrestek's testimony either way is that it was, other than that, it was limited to the garage. Now Deputy Macht, who testified that he stood outside the door while Helgett and Forrestek spoke with Mr. Shaw's mother. On page 44, he said that she said they could look anywhere they wanted to. But, the total record shows that two out of the three officers said that this was specific consent limited to the garage, and that's a preponderance of the evidence.
Did Mr. Shaw live at that property or not? It seems that he did not.
Well, it was the address on his driver's license, and he had a bedroom at the house. Mr. Shaw's mother, apparently in the record, said something about how he didn't technically live there, but there was no clarification of what that meant. And every other indication that we have is that he did, and that's why the officers were there in the first place. Is that they found his address registered to his truck at that house, and so that's why they went there.
Well, the state says that he didn't live there in their brief at page 6. And so I'm trying to clarify what the record really says about that.
I don't have the exact transcript page number, but the record says that, all three officers testified that the reason they went to that house in the first place is because they looked up the driver's or the license plate from the truck, found that it was registered to Mr. Shaw, and found that that was his place of address. And also, Mr. Shaw's mother said that he had a bedroom in the house, which is what he went to check.
If he didn't live there, would you agree that he wouldn't have standing?
I think I would probably agree. There's some cases that say that like something like an overnight guest at a house would have standing to challenge a search. And so he had a bedroom there, which implies that he was
His bedroom wasn't in his fish house, though.
No, the bedroom was not his fish house.
Okay.
I just need to clarify, because you were running through, helpfully, the testimony of the various officers with respect to what they overheard the mother say. The omnibus order says two officers testified that Shaw's mother consented to the search of the backyard property.
Right.
Was that consistent with what you said?
No. So that's the factual finding made by the lower court that is not supported by the record, and that our position is clearly erroneous, is because two of the three officers, in fact, as we went through, said that they had specific consent to search the garage and that she didn't say anything about the backyard.
Is that really pinned down in the stipulated facts?
The stipulated facts are that they never asked. I believe that fact specifically is stipulated too in the stipulation at the trial level.
I see that the homeowner was not asked for consent to search the outbuildings before searching them, but maybe I'm overlooking it, but you think it is something that was stipulated to by the state, that the mother did not agree to search of the backyard?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it you could be correct, Your Honor, that it only says the outbuildings, mm-hmm. but that in combination with the testimony of the officers that I think what the record combined with the stipulated facts show is that this was a specific consent. Mr. Shaw's mother said, you can look in the garage if you want to, and didn't say anything about anywhere else on the property. And so then in moving from the garage into the backyard and then from the backyard into the outbuildings, they exceeded the scope of the consent that Mr. Shaw's mother gave them. So just to wrap up some of the curtilage argument that I was talking about.
Could I just stop you one moment?
Yeah.
Marshall, did the clock get started on time?
It doesn't appear. It did not, no. Okay. But I'll be able to reset in a couple minutes to 5 minutes left. I've been keeping track.
Okay. Sorry for that confusion.
That's okay.
To the extent you're relying on that.
That's okay. So the second factor is the nature of the uses to which the area is put. And in State v. Shute, the Minnesota Supreme Court found that a backyard was curtilage when the residents of the house used it as a primary or a main place of entry and exit into the house and when they stored scrap materials there in the backyard. And we have evidence of similar uses in this case. because the officers testified that Mr. Shaw had appeared to park his truck in the backyard on more than just this occasion. And so that's evidence that he was using the backyard as a place to get from his house to his vehicle and vice versa in kind of a private area. And also the family, the Shaw family was storing, you know, trailers, sheds, fish houses in their backyard, which is evidence that they didn't keep these things out in the front yard where anybody passing by on the street could see them or take things. They kept it in the backyard where it was away from the road. So these are uses that reflect an expectation of privacy. And then the last factor supporting it is that is steps taken by the residents to protect the area from view. And the officers didn't testify that they saw any of these outbuildings or the truck in the backyard from the road while they were approaching the property. They only saw it once they were on the property and, you know, had moved into the backyard. And so curtilage doesn't need to be completely shielded from view. But in this case, this was a typical private backyard behind the house, not, you know, easily visible from the road. It was an area where Mr. Shaw was at home and expected that it was a private area. And so because he had that reasonable expectation of privacy in that backyard, the officers needed a warrant exception to justify. And as we've talked about consent, another exception that they argued covers the search here was hot pursuit. And that doesn't cover this because, you know, to put it simply, this wasn't a pursuit. There's a line in Minnesota case law that articulates that a hot pursuit is meant for situations where an officer sees a crime committed and then pursues the person into a home. In that scenario, the officers can go in and make an arrest. But in this case, they didn't see a crime committed, or they didn't see the crash, much less see a crime committed. They didn't follow Mr. Shaw from the scene of the crash to his home. They didn't actually even know that he would be at the home, right? They just...
Nor did they know, I don't think, that he was the driver, right?
Correct, but, you know, so if they made the...
Was registered to...
That's correct. So they didn't know whoever was driving the car would be at the home. This was not something where they chased them to the home. They just, you know, they were doing a step-by-step investigation of this crash. And also, this arrest was actually barred specifically by Minnesota State Statute 629.34C, which seems to codify the hot pursuit exception. That statute says that an officer can make an arrest without a warrant in one of two circumstances: when an offense was committed in the officer's presence, or when the person arrested has committed a felony, although not in the officer's presence. And so the charged offense here was a misdemeanor, and officers, it was not committed in the presence of any police officer. So not only does the common law hot pursuit doctrine not cover the search here, but the warrantless arrest was actually specifically barred by state statute. And one last thing about hot pursuit, the events here were at 9:30 a.m. on a weekday. Officers had testified that they knew the courthouse was open. They testified that they were in position to make sure that Mr. Shaw didn't escape. And there's no reason they couldn't have stayed in that position for as long as the short time it would have taken to obtain a search warrant if they were confident that they had probable cause that Mr. Shaw had been driving drunk or committed any other crime. The last warrant exception that the state has argued for is emergency circumstances. And emergency circumstances, in order to justify a warrantless search under emergency circumstances, police must have reasonable grounds to believe that there is an immediate need for their assistance for the protection of life or property, and the search must not be primarily motivated by an intent to arrest. So neither of those is the case here. Here's what the police knew at the time that they entered the fish house, according to the facts in the record. They knew that a truck registered to Mr. Shaw had collided with a utility pole and then had been driven away from the scene of the accident, had safely and successfully been returned to the Shaw's house and parked in the backyard, that whoever was driving that car didn't seek medical attention. None of them had been to the scene of the crash before they went to the house, so it's not as if they saw that or knew that, you know, that extensive damage had been caused to the pole. They saw the truck before going into the fish house, and they didn't testify that any serious damage had been done to the truck. So everything that officers had seen up to this point points towards a relatively minor property damage crash.
We do have stipulated fact number 8, though, that says the deputies explained they were there talking to the mother.
Yep.
They were there due to a traffic accident, wanted to do a welfare check on the driver.
Yeah, and I think that that's what the officers said, but I think that...
So why does that not provide the basis for the...
Well, because this is an objective test. And so you look at what facts the officers knew at the time they did the search. And those facts don't point towards any kind of serious crash where they had reasonable grounds to believe that Mr. Shaw was seriously injured or that they needed to protect life or property. And in fact, this arrest was primarily motivated instead by an intent to arrest. And that's shown by the fact that they testified that they had somebody stay out front in position to make sure he didn't escape. And then when they did find him in the fish house, according to Deputy Helgett's testimony, the first thing they did was not to check whether he needed medical attention or anything like that, but it was to begin a DUI investigation by putting him through field sobriety tests.
Your argument to me seems to imply you do some type of credibility determination with these stipulated facts, rather than take it at face value.
I don't
think that the officer should not be believed for making the statement.
No, I don't think, Your Honor, that I'm making a credibility determination. I think it's just that the subjective belief of the officer is not what goes towards the test. It's an objective test of what they knew at the time. And so I'm almost, you know, I see I'm out of time. Is it,
please,
can I conclude?
Please complete your response.
Yeah, I just think that the focus of the inquiry here is on what they knew before they searched the house and not what they say their purpose was. And so I'm not trying to make any inferences about their credibility as much as what the evidence would have supported in terms of the officer's actions at that juncture.
Any further questions? May I ask you to repeat your name? I don't find it in my...
Of course. Sam Luwagie. I can spell the last name.
Please.
If you need to. Luwagie.
Are you from the Marshall area?
I have family from the Marshall area, but I'm not...
Say that's the typical Luwagie spelling.
Yeah.
Marshall.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Luwagie.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is James Cole. I'm with the Steele County Attorney's Office. I'm going to start with this idea of whether the police had consent to search for the defendant in this case. And as the appellant has noted, it's a totality of the circumstances type argument here regarding the consent. Notwithstanding whether there was standing for the defendant to actually challenge the consent or the search for him at that property, whether or not the mother gave consent is borne out by the record and the district court's finding that the officers were able to search places other than the house, I do believe is accurate. If the court looks at the transcript and the stipulated facts, it states in both of those that the mother's concern was not to scare the children who were at the daycare in the house. That's why she didn't want the officers coming in there. And I think two officers testified to that fact, that the mother just didn't want us scaring the children.
Right, but that's a different question. The reason for her non-consent to the entry into the house is a different question than whether she gave consent to search the backyard.
The officers stated, I believe that from the officer's testimony, their belief was that her consent was, her restriction on her consent was limited only to the house.
Okay, you indicated in your brief on page... my eyesight is bad. It's maybe nine. In any event, you say Deputy Mock testified that the homeowner said that the officers were not allowed in the house but could search elsewhere, citing transcript 27. I don't see that on page 27.
Deputy Mock, if I got the cite wrong, I apologize.
Well, the question is, and she was pretty adamant that she didn't want police to come into the home and search, correct? Yes. Question, and then she did ultimately allow you to look through that garage, right? Correct. Question, but you never asked her about the two fish houses, the trailer, or the storage shed, correct? Answer, I did not. It says no such thing.
Well, I'm going to have to look for that site, Your Honor. I apologize if that was a mistake.
Well, the very next sentence says, Deputy Helgett testified that the homeowner did not want them to come into the home due to her daycare, but gave them permission to search elsewhere, citing page 19. I don't see that on page 19 either.
Well, page 19 is Deputy Helgett's testimony.
Correct.
Her concern was that her house was a mess. She did not want me walking through her house because of that and providing daycare for the children, which
is prior to that. Okay, but the last part of your sentence in your brief is, but gave them permission to search elsewhere. Point me to that reference on page 19, if you would be so kind.
I guess I was relying on the officer's inference there, Your Honor. It is not on that page, and I apologize.
On page, around the stipulation, it says that the police did not ask the homeowner for her consent to search these buildings before searching them. That's part of the stipulation, right?
That was part of the stipulation for the trial to the court on the stipulated facts. There was no stipulation as to the evidence that came before the court in the probable cause determination. And so I believe that those are two separate issues, Your Honor. The facts that were presented to the court also stated that the mother did not want the officers in the home because it would scare the children, sort of following that line of argument. But again, I believe that this stipulated facts was specifically for the evidence that the court would use at a trial and a finding of guilt rather than a determination of probable cause.
The second question I had was about your line on page 6 of your brief that says that the appellant did not live at the house. What support is there in the record for that?
Well, the officer's testimony that the mother told them that, well, he doesn't technically live here. And so that is the support for that. The record is a little bit lacking, I'll admit, in any other evidence as to what that particular statement meant. One can assume that it's a young man who used to live at was raised at a residence, had his residence there, and has now moved on. He still has a room there, much like most of us do when we go off to college or are old enough to be out of the home. But the mother was pretty forward with the officer. Says, well, he doesn't technically live here.
Doesn't that give him an expectation of privacy in his mother's home, even if he's overnight guest occasionally?
If he is an overnight guest, I would agree that he would have some expectation of privacy in the home. The officers didn't go into the home. There was some confusion in the record, and I apologize if I made that more difficult. But the mother went and searched the room at the officer's request, and I think that shows that the officers were trying to honor the mother's wishes. If their intent had been to come there to arrest this person and just grab him, and that they weren't concerned about his welfare or anything like that, they could have gone into that house and said, no, we're in hot pursuit here. But the mother said, I don't want you coming in. I'll go look to see that he's okay, or not see that he's okay. I'm adding that myself. But I'll go check. She goes and checks, comes back, says he's not in there. So then they begin to search the garage, and there is a trail then seen from the driveway leading around to the back.
Well, the standing issue is not before us, correct, Mr.
Correct.
You did not appeal that.
I did not.
And the district court found
they
that
did.
He lived at
yes.
the house.
Right. Yes. The curtilage argument that has been raised is another interesting one, and the factors that were laid out by appellant are accurate. We're taking a look at whether what exactly this area is that is described as a backyard, and I think a lot of this case is being hung up on labels that are given to the objects involved. We have the backyard and we have a fish house. Now, State v. Larson very clearly says that a fish house is built to protect people from the elements and protect their activities, give them privacy while they're using that to fish. And as an ice fisherman, I agree. I use it for that. But the fish house in this case isn't that fish house. This house is in a yard with weeds growing up around it in a dilapidated state, rotting. A hasp of the lock was coming off of it. In fact, they saw signs of mice inside of the fish house. This clearly wasn't put there to protect someone from the elements while they're ice fishing. And because it happens to still be called a fish house, even though it may have once served that purpose, would that logic could be extended to afford an abandoned farmhouse on a site that no one lives in anymore, or a junked out car versus an automobile traveling down the road.
Well, we agree with you that Larson does not control here.
Okay.
Wouldn't you consider this to be an outbuilding?
Yes. It would, and I think that what cuts against the argument that this outbuilding is in the curtilage is that it is not enclosed. There's no fence. It is on a regular city lot, which is viewable by the other lots in the area. There is this house was not in an area that is so intimately tied to the home or to the home's activities that it. And it can be seen by the fact that it's out in the weeds, which have grown up around it. There's enough room between the house and this old fish house to drive a vehicle back there. This is not something that was where you were having Saturday morning breakfast, you know, out of the view of the neighbors. It is out on the edge of the property in tall weeds and in such a state of disrepair that I think it shows that it was not considered a place that was used for something to conceal their activities or to keep anything private. There was no fence around the property as they have already stated. The hot pursuit doctrine that was mentioned.
Are there any photos in the record of what you're describing?
There are not, Your Honor. The hot pursuit doctrine, that was raised. A person may not avoid arrest simply by running into a building. And let's look at the information that the officers had here. They received a call from dispatch of a possible injury accident. The accident took out a utility pole, and there's testimony that it knocked out power in part of the city. They then received report from fire and rescue, not John Q. Citizen or anything, that the driver of that vehicle sped away from the accident after he was able to get free. So they do have information as they're en route as to what is happening with this particular vehicle and in this particular instance. And I think that it's fair for them to check the address that the vehicle is registered to and to proceed to that particular address. They did not witness the crash. That's obvious from the record. But I think that the presence rule has enough give in it that that if you're en route to the accident, someone there sees the person leave, there were witnesses to the accident itself, that there is enough of a presence for the officers to be in hot pursuit. They went to the one place where they thought he would go, and the vehicle was there.
Is there evidence in the record that anyone knew who the driver was at the time?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
So what the officers really knew was that a vehicle that was registered at that address had apparently been involved in the accident.
Yes.
It's entirely reasonable for the police to go to that address. I completely agree with that. But I'm not sure that I can understand that as hot pursuit. It's more of an investigation at that point of let's go see what's going on at that address.
The other argument that I would make is that I do believe Minnesota Statute 169.40 allows an officer to make a non-presence arrest on DWI-type offenses. And the record here would have an accident from which a person fled, a possible injury accident. So if the officers were operating under that that perception, then that would give them a reason to go to the home and search for that individual in a look to arrest him.
Well, I don't mean to suggest there was anything wrong with going to the house. I think that was entirely proper. I just am having a hard time understanding it as a hot pursuit if you don't really know who the driver is.
Correct. Well, I think that the fact that when they get there, in short order, they've seen the trail going around the house. The vehicle that it was described as leaving the scene with the license plate is there immediately visible after the officers have come around to the backyard.
But they're already in the backyard at that point, and there's a dispute about whether they had consent of the homeowner.
That is correct, yes. Right. So that would be the state's argument as far as the hot pursuit. I do believe that that an exigent circumstance here as to whether this individual was injured gives the officers another reason to look for this individual. The officers were notified of a possible injury accident on the way to the scene. Fire and rescue that fire and rescue was at. They say that this individual fled the scene. Now, the fact that the person flees the scene, I don't think any lessens any more the fact that that you would be concerned for his safety or well-being. Head injuries, any number of injuries, and even a person who has driven and intoxicated, who does not want to get in trouble, can flee the scene with some very serious injuries. We've seen that all the time. So, what you know, a person fleeing the scene, I don't think gives us any credence as to whether this was an injury accident or not. I think the officers had a duty to check out and make sure that this individual was doing all right, and their arrival at the scene very closely after that gives them an ability to look for this person.
Is that interval of time pinned down in the record, Mr. Cole?
I don't believe so. I know Deputy Macht was there, and then Deputy Helgett got there some 10 to 15 minutes later. So, you know, at the outside edge, where it's 10 minutes. But the specific time that it took for Deputy Macht to get there, I'm not aware of that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Standard for the exigent circumstances is there a reason to believe that an emergency exists or someone may need assistance? And I think I've outlined that. The search is limited to the area that is approximate to their reason to searching there. So the vehicles found in the backyard, the trail from the driveway leads to the backyard, and then the warm vehicle, they can see the matted grass in front of the fish house. I do believe all those lead us a trail to look for this individual in that area. And I also think that the officers not just going into the house to arrest the defendant leads them to suggest that they are really looking for him to see if he has an injury or not. The mother going to look for the person, the officers were taking her at her word, and I think that one would take a person at her word. If she's looking and she sees he's injured, she'll let him know. If he's hiding from her, what are they going to, I don't think there'd be a reason to lie about that. I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Yes, Chief Smith.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that the police had reason to believe that he was under the influence of alcohol before they went to the residence?
Other than the accident itself and him fleeing the scene, no, I do not believe that there was any testimony as to that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Thank you.
Mr. Luigi, rebuttal if you would like it.
Yes, briefly, Your Honor.
So there was some discussion about the fact that Mr. Shah's mother gave a reason for denying entry into the house, that sort of indicated to officers that as long as the officers didn't scare the kids, it was okay. But this is consent is an exception to the warrant requirement, which is something that is narrowly construed. And just, you know, if just because the officers, maybe they'd believed that what the mom meant was, we can search anywhere as long as we don't scare the kids. But the facts in the record are that the mom didn't say anything about the outbuildings or the backyard in general, and if she didn't say anything about it, she couldn't have given consent to it. In the curtilage argument, again, the fact that the fish house was rotting or dilapidated, as you stated, Your Honor, that larceny is not what's at issue here because it was within the curtilage, because it was in the backyard. So the curtilage analysis focuses on the backyard, and the fact that neighbors can see into your backyard doesn't mean that it's not a private area, doesn't mean that it's not curtilage. So, you know, even if it, you know, there's no evidence in the record as to how far away it was from the house, but it was in the backyard of a single family residential home within the city limits. In hot pursuit, counsel said that the officers knew that this crash had knocked out a utility pole, which caused some people to lose power in the city. There's no testimony in the transcripts that they knew that, at least at the time that they did the search. They might have found it out after, but all three officers testified. They were all asked, you know, what did you learn about the crash from dispatch? And they all say that it was a property damage crash with possible injuries, and that's all that any of them say. So the fact that it was serious enough to cause power outages or cause serious damage to a utility pole, under the record, is not something that they knew at the time. And then for the emergency circumstances, the possible injury, like I just said, that, you know, so dispatch did tell the officers that, or did say this was a possible injury crash. But that's the only thing in the record that supports the idea that somebody was seriously hurt, as dispatch saying a possible injury crash. And the protections of the Fourth Amendment can't go out the window just because there's from a completely unsupported statement by dispatch, who are in a rush to get this information out to officers, and that officers then find evidence that not only doesn't support that there are possible injuries, but contradicts it, given the fact that the individual was able to make it successfully home, the truck was not seriously damaged, at least there's no testimony that it was, and that the individual's mother didn't indicate to the officers that her son was injured or needed any help.
Although there's no evidence she knew he was there.
That's right. That's correct.
Would it be a dereliction of duty for the officers not to check somebody out who has been in an accident where they received word that there were possible injuries?
I don't think it would be, because it's not as if they saw a bunch of busted glass or a totaled car and then somebody had run on foot, you know, or something. This was, if somebody gets into a fender bender and for some reason, you know, in the game of telephone, it comes out to dispatch that somebody might have been injured in this crash, but the person who was involved went home and went inside of their house. I don't think it would be a dereliction of duty for police not to enter that house without a warrant because they heard that there might be.
Of course, they didn't enter in the house.
Sure, but they entered the curtilage of the house. I don't think it would be a dereliction of duty for police to not enter the curtilage of the home without consent and without a warrant, just based on that one fact from dispatch. So that's all I have on rebuttal, unless there are any other questions from your honors.
Thank you, Mr. Luwagie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Thank you. Matter has been submitted.